And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, for many people, maybe for most people in North Carolina, the North Carolina's favorite author is our own Hillsborough's own, Orange County's own, Dean Smith. And to the delight of those of us who are her fans, Lee has a new book published by our own Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. And the book is titled Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. It's a group of we don't say short stories anymore. We would like to say stories. Is that right, Lee?
Well, either way. But for me, it's probably better to say stories because the older I get, the longer they get.
The longer the short stories get. Well, maybe the first thing but people have asked you about, Darcy is not a real common name, but it is a literary name.
And so gosh.
People have raised the question about whether or not you're trying to trick us into thinking that this is about
Jane Austen.
Yeah, Jane Austen.
D.G., this is a problem, which I did not realize. Yeah, Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger is one of my absolute favorite older stories. It was an O. Henry Award story and so on, and so I wanted to put it in the book, and I've always loved it, so I took it as the title story. Little did I know that all over this country there is a huge Jane Austen craze. And the minute you use the word, the surname Darcy, all the Jane Austenites, the Janeites, come out and they think that you've written another Jane Austen spinoff. I had no idea until I went up.
Well, tell us the story about
it. It was so funny. Well, Algonquin had me going up to speak to the American Library Association before the book ever came out. But it was already in print. You know, they were already working on it last January. And after I read, we were giving away a few advanced reader copies. And the first librarian in line came running up and grabbed the book and said, "Thank God, I just love Jane Austen."
Oh, and then that was the moment it hit. And you said, "Oh, no, I didn't mean
and
to
I
do
didn't,
that."
Well, I didn't know yet. I didn't know what she meant. And so I thought, well, this is just a crazy lady. You know, and I smiled. I was real nice. And then the next librarian came up, and she said, I'm so glad you like Jane Austen, too. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I do like Jane Austen, but what does she have to do with my book here? And then she told me. And then, of course, I go in a big bookstore, and I see a huge pile of Jane Austen spinoff books, and they're things like Mr. Darcy and the Vampires.
Yeah,
and
he's a vampire.
Everything.
Yeah, right.
So anybody looking for vampires Jane is going to be disappointed
yeah,
here.
Yeah, but to sell a few books, you might put a little sticker on it that says Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger, who, as you know, is a vampire.
That's right. Anything to help, I tell you.
Well, this is, you mentioned that this, we don't want to say it's an older story, but it's one that had been published before. But it's
this is a collection, D.G., of brand new and selected stories from I can't even tell you how many stories I've written. So this is a very...
These are the best of the best.
This is a cut. Well, I don't even know if they're the best of
the
best. They're the ones that, for one reason or another, seem to mean a lot to me. And
they're selected by Lisa Smith of her favorites. And then some favorite newer.
Yeah, and I didn't want to publish a book... a lot of times I think this type of collection is a doorstop if you put all your stories in it. And I didn't want that. I didn't want something that would just go up on a shelf. It's funny, I told Algonquin, I said, I want it to be the size that somebody would really read and that they might take to the beach.
A beach read. Yeah.
And then, you know what, they put shells and sand on the front. And I loved it. Well, Mrs. Darcy, that story does take place at Polly's Island.
Yeah, let's talk about that story. And it had some relevance for me. Well, a lot more than I'm willing to admit it has a lot to do with me. But because I just got back from the beach with my family.
Okay.
Celebrating a senior birthday.
Right.
And although I'm not ready to declare that I recognize that my children are beginning to worry about what they're going to do with me. But but they are. They clearly are. And
I'm so, sure mine are conferring right now.
My take on the great thing is that people read into things differently than what you wrote into it.
Yes.
These stories.
And so yes.
What I was reading into Mrs. Darcy was the children's concern expressed in different ways, the daughters of Mrs. Darcy. And Mrs. Darcy is about...
She's in her 70s, I guess.
In her 70s.
Late 70s, something like that,
maybe.
Yeah.
And there are... She is functioning unusually in some respects, and so there's good reason for the children to be worried about her. But in other respects, she's going strong.
Yes.
And she's got her own independent life that for which the children's concern could disrupt her independent spirit and all of this. And so, I mean, this is
right.
a timely story. All right,
this
what else is
always
going on?
A timely story, I think.
Tell us about Miss Darcy.
Well, the reason I wrote it actually was because everything is personal for me with the stories. And this story comes out of a vacation at Polly's Island, where my family and I were next door to... a family that consisted of a recent widow and her three adult daughters who were so concerned because Mama wasn't acting like she was supposed to. She had always been very much a conventional conservative lady in a large southern city with a certain standing and so on. And now she's quit dressing up. She's eating only frozen pizza. And worst of all, she's become charismatic and persists in having these visions of a blue-eyed stranger, which could be Jesus, could be Willie Nelson. But and not only that, she's begun healing people. And
so this is real.
And so they were forever gathering out on the beach to try to decide what to do about Mama. But because they were sure she was losing her mind, and it was also profoundly embarrassing to have Mama running around in her flip-flops and not using the china and so on. So I just took it a lot of steps farther than that and made up the characters. I didn't really know the people. I just knew they were worried because Mama had quit being an Episcopalian and had started into this woo-woo church. And so anyway, this gave me the idea for the story. But, you know, one thing that interests me is how children do not like for their parents to change. I mean, we all get an image of our parents, and it somehow turns to stone, just like Mount Rushmore. And if an older parent goes through a big change of interest or a new this or a new that, is profoundly, of course, upsetting to the children. So that was one thing... that I've always been interested in and that I wanted to write about. And then, too, I've always been interested in moments that are beyond our rational capacity to understand.
Yeah, well, this is interesting because a lot of times the typical thing, looking at typical families, regular parents who've grown up with a regular kind of religion. And then one of the children goes off in one direction or another into the becomes interested in Eastern religions
right.
and puts on a monk's suit and shaves head and
some right.
or goes into a more active conservative religious group.
Right.
And the parents are worried about the child. But it can happen in reverse, too.
It can happen in reverse. Usually it doesn't. I think maybe as we age, we often become sort of more of what we are, kind of. We sort of solidify in a way. But it's possible to make a big change. And this is really a challenge for our family and for everybody. So while this is a humorous story in many ways, it's also... dead serious, and it examines something really serious.
Well, the blue-eyed stranger in this story. Now, the Lee Smith book is called Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. But that's just one story. There's one story with that. And that's the story we're talking
but
about.
But you know what? It's funny, DG, when you write. I mean, I've written these stories over 45 years of publishing stories. Okay? This is just a few stories from all that time. And when I looked at them as a whole, I found that blue-eyed stranger in one guise or another popping up. And really, all my work from all my life, it's just I've always been fascinated in the moments that can't be understood, the moments where we seem to have or feel or understand or have a moment of illumination sort of beyond ourselves, like a kind of transcendent moment. And I think you find those actually in just about all of these stories. And I wasn't even aware of that until I put them together and was just kind of trying to look at them and think, well, do they have anything in common?
Well, here.
And there it was.
Yeah, well, this is where I want you to take me because I'm very suspicious of the irrational or the moments where you see an apparition or there, you know, there's an image of a blue-eyed stranger, an angel comes down and tells you something. I mean, I consider myself religious, but I have a hard time believing all these
things.
And it undercuts some of my religious beliefs that I don't, you know, that I'm, you know, like, the Bible says that.
Why won't your Forsythia catch on fire?
I mean, you're wrapped up in these blue-eyed strangers and in other mysterious events. And are you the same as me? Are you a believer in these things? Are you just fascinated by them and say, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but whatever is happening, this is an interesting.
Well, this is interesting. This is interesting. There's another story in here named Tongues of Fire, which is a fairly autobiographical story about a little girl who is fascinated, and that's autobiographical just in the sense that it's about a, you know, a girl, a 13-year-old, which is an interesting age to me.
We got to take a break. But because I want to talk about Tongues of Fire for a
long time. Okay.
We're visiting with Lee Smith about her new book of stories called Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger, and she and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Lee Smith. We're talking about her new book, Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. The Blue-Eyed Stranger is sort of is one of the stories, and in that story there is Mrs. Darcy encounters an image, an apparition. She sees a blue-eyed stranger that other people don't see. And Lee Smith, before we took the break, you were explaining that in another one of your stories in this book, Tongues of Fire, the subject, a little girl.
Has a similar experience.
Tell us about that.
Yeah.
And you've said this is a little bit autobiographical. Where did this story come from?
Well, this story, the main character here in the story, Tongues of Fire, is a 13-year-old girl, much like the kind of girl I was, who is just emotional and a big reader and very imaginative and just fascinated with you know, with all kinds of things that cause strong emotion, whether she's in love with the characters in the book she's reading constantly or whatever it may be. And in my own life, you know, we went to a church in town, the Methodist church in town. My mother was a home economics teacher. We were just all very solid, down-to-earth folks. Churchgoers every time they open the door, but, you know, very solid, down-to-earth folks. But I did have a best friend whose mother spoke in tongues, and I loved it when I would get to go spend the night with her.
And go to church there.
Out in the county, yeah, and go to church there. And there was a point when she would, you know, dance around and speak in tongues, and then we'd have to get behind her and catch her when she'd fall out, and then we'd lay her out, and then, you know, and then she'd get up, and we'd all eat dinner on the ground. And to me, this was because I was a carefully raised only child. And to me, I just loved this mother because somehow speaking in tongues was the opposite of home economics.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? There was
right.
something going on there. There was
a letting loose
yeah.
of what we're in a regular Southern household, we're raised to
right.
keep things under control.
Right. And so then I went into a phase where literally I took to rededicating my life at revivals all over the county to my mother's immense embarrassment. And finally they—
No revivals, not even a formal kind of revival week in your church?
Well, yeah, I would always rededicate my life in my own church. But then I got to doing it all over the county. My mother was so embarrassed, and they sent me off to camp, which is what happens in this story.
Right, right.
Where then an actual religious occurrence happens to this child.
And that's all so autobiographical?
Yeah. Where I decided that I heard the voice of God speaking to me. And they asked me, they said, well, how do you know it was the voice of God? And I said, because it's a man's voice and this is a girl's camp.
Well, obvious.
Anyway, they put me in the infirmary because I'd heard the voice of God.
What did God say to you?
Just call my name.
He just called
As
you.
In the,
like
yeah.
Like in Samuel, in the book of Samuel when Samuel hears the Lord, but it's, or thinks it's Eli, his mentor. And
well,
Eli,
now see.
Priest, I mean, that's the.
Yeah.
So, but you, that it, there wasn't anything other than just.
It was a Lee. Call.
Lee.
Yeah, just Lee.
Lee.
And I was also running a fever. So they put me in the infirmary. And my mother, I remember talking to my mother on the phone, and she said, if you will quit saying that you have heard the voice of God, we will buy you a Pekingese.
No,
this is so embarrassing. So I got the Pekingese and became an Episcopalian.
No,
what
I
can
mean,
I say?
Was, I mean, to me, that is a much of a.
This is a serious subject, although I'm making a joke.
Indefensible compromise yeah. about religious matters is I've heard that you gave up a sincere religious experience and belief for a dog.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. I know, but
and
I really wanted
to compromise the rest of your life, but you remained fascinated with the experience.
Yeah, I didn't.
Experiences.
I mean, okay, here's the deal. I wanted the dog, but I never gave up believing that occurrence, that voice I had heard, was something that was very real and very much outside myself.
Right,
you know, and I would quit talking about it and embarrassing my mother.
The dog's gone, so
mm-hmm.
you don't have to worry about giving the dogs.
Right.
You believe that it was God talking to you, or do you believe it was the fever, looking back on
I don't
it?
Know. I don't know, but
you,
I mean, do believe.
What do you believe? What do you think?
I no longer, I guess, can accept the particular doctrines of, say, that church that my friend went to out in the country that I was so fascinated with. But I still believe that there are things. I believe in a transcendental sort of God. I
yeah,
believe
not,
that there are things that we cannot ever understand, and I do find that I have kept writing about them. I spent a lot of time with serpent handling believers at one point in my life, D.G., and wrote a novel, Saving Grace, about that scary and very real belief. But I'm drawn to this kind of thing.
There's a difference between interested in
mm-hmm.
and being fascinated by
mm-hmm.
the mysterious. The mysteries that mm-hmm. other people are experiencing.
Well, I would have to say I'm fascinated by, although I cannot say that I have any traditional religious beliefs at this point. I mean, I'm not like a real churchgoer, but I am. I'm thinking about these things and
yeah.
reading about these things and believing what I believe.
Well, what I've asked you, do you believe that God was talking to you at camp?
Yeah.
You do.
I do. Man, I also believe that a 13-year-old girl is sort of the ideal person who's able to hear.
Oh, wow. Well, and that, well, I mean.
Or somebody, or a recent widow. I mean, people who are at liminal points in their lives when they are sort of between things and so on. And this is the person who can hear and who can see. And this is the artist, really. This is the person who sees the story, hears the story. This is the character that the story happens to when you're receptive to something outside yourself or you're receptive to change. And, you know, I guess this is why writing stories has always been just the most fascinating thing in the world for me.
These stories, you do the job with every one of these stories.
Well, it's such a pleasure, DG. You know, such a pleasure.
With Lee Smith about her new book of stories. Some new stories and some selected stories. Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. She and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Lee Smith. Lee's latest book is Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. This is a collection of 14 stories, some new and some selected from the countless stories that Lee has written over a short period of time.
45 years, right?
and Lee, we've gotten off. Maybe we shouldn't have done this, but it's just I'm deeply interested in religion, and you apparently are too. But wondering, wrestling with my own beliefs, and I'm just jumping on you, pushing you when this has a secret underlying purpose. Now, in addition to the experiences that some of our friends and acquaintances have in terms of actual communication with the spirit world or more particularly with God, many of our friends also see flying saucers.
Yeah.
Or extraterrestrial. And you have a story
that
has a little bit to do with that. And would you tell us
I do. Vision? And that story is one. Again, each of these stories comes out of a particular point in my own life. I mean, I'll never write a memoir, did you? And I just, because I, instead, what
it's all in your stories.
I write short stories, I think, the way other people might write in their journals or their diaries, and what I'm going through at any given time, the different phases and stages of my life tend to show up as short stories. And I'm always writing some long novel, but I'll put it aside frequently to write stories, which kind of come out of my own actual life more.
The stories you get when you're running,
they're made up.
You're running a marathon with the novel.
Yeah, and it takes a long time.
No,
it just takes a long, long, long time. But the stories hit you, just hit you in a different way, and you've got to just write them. And so with this novel that you mentioned where there's a vision from outer space or a flying saucer at the end, that's a story named Intensive Care.
Yeah, but this story, the experience kind of catches you by surprise, and it caught me by surprise because most of your stories, the central character is a woman.
This is a man, Harold Oxen. Harold Stikes.
Who, as you put it, in his former life was a Presbyterian. Well, since I'm a Presbyterian, that caught my attention. Tell us a little bit about this story.
I wrote this story when my mother was dying of emphysema. And she was in intensive care for a really, really, really long time. And Daddy, who loved her so much, could not bear to let her go. And the Rodney Broadbent, who was the respiratory therapist in here, was exactly the respiratory therapist that we had. He was fabulous. But in any case, this story is about Harold Stikes, who had a perfectly ordinary, perfectly expected marriage until one day, somehow, it was not enough. and he was looking at a quiz that his wife had filled in one of these, you know, like family magazines, and
testing
where she
marriage,
checked off testing your marriage, and she just said it was a perfectly ordinary marriage. And suddenly he was struck as if by a bolt of lightning, one of those moments we're talking about, and he just looked out his picture window, and the whole world took on a certain other glow, and he said it is not enough. And he then proceeded to go over to the food line and fall in love with a girl from his high school, Cherry Oxendine, who had been the wild girl. And he gave up everything, his home, his children, his wife, everything, for Cherry Oxendine, who proceeds to get...
So he gives up everything, and he does. He falls in love with this other woman,
yeah.
And then she proceeds to
get really sick, and so she is the one. She is the one against all odds, who is in intensive care, and it's really a Harold story. But she used to be in a UFO club with her girlfriends, where they would go out. You know, where they'd go out and drink gin and tonics and sit in the field and have a big time and look for and look for UFOs. And so we do get back to that at the end. But it's about love. It's about the unexpectedness and intensity of love. And Harold does experience not an ordinary love. And what does that mean?
What?
You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And so, again, it's not a, it's this moment is not seen in religious terms, but it is the kind of moment that, that can come to us. And that often does seem to come to my characters, as I said, which I realized in, looking back at these stories.
Well, in the story, as you mentioned earlier, is inspired by the love that your father showed for your mother as she was dying in a similar way.
Yeah.
But your daddy, your mom and daddy didn't have anything to do with UFOs. This
was
an implant.
Not a thing. But, you know, that's the way somehow, if you're a fiction writer, that's often the way it works. What gets you going on a story, what brings a story to you, to your imagination and your intensity, isn't at all necessarily what the story may end up, but just for the writer, there is that meaning. There is that moment. You know, there is what it has come out of. But anyway, I think that's a intensive care to me. I mean, we have all been in those intensive care waiting rooms, right? And to me, I hope it speaks just to that experience, you know, for any of us. And you know, what does a life mean? I mean, what does it mean? And what does it mean to love somebody? That's, you know, that's sort of what I'm thinking about there.
This story's gotten me in trouble with my wife because I wrote something about the great ability that you have to get us in the shoes of people who are very different from who we are and to... it's kind of like taking a ride in a fair, in a county fair.
You know what? That's what it's like to be a writer.
Where you get to take the ride, and then you get to get off and live your own life. But I got into, is it Harold Sykes?
Harold Sykes, yeah.
Harold Sykes. And so I kind of said, Harold, having fallen in love with the woman who's not his wife, and then, you know, usually you would say, these men who fall in love with the other woman and then see their families disappearing into the distance. They can't go back to their house or their former lives. There are regrets that pile up. And so I said, regrets, not for Harold and not for me. So when my wife was proofing
oh, no.
She went crazy. No, she didn't. She just said, okay, I see. And I tried to explain, you know, that this was – that it was your fault, not mine.
Absolutely. I take complete responsibility. But, you know, for the writer, too, I mean, I think I often, in addition to capturing moments and characters that mean a lot to me personally, just the glimpse of them, I think that I write for this reason that Ann Tyler, one of my favorite writers, also a North Carolinian once said when people ask her, somebody asked her why she writes, and she said, I write because I want to have more than one life. Isn't that wonderful? I write, and so, I mean, I haven't been Harold Stikes either, and I haven't gotten to that moment in any marriage of my own. But it's just to conceive of these people and have them be so real and get to be them for a little while, you know, is a great pleasure. It is exactly like going, getting on a ride at the fair. It's exactly, that is the perfect, perfect metaphor, DG. Thank you very much. I bet I'm going to use that.
Well, I'm going to take a breath and we're going to take a break. We're talking, Lee Smith and I are talking about her new book, Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. And she and I will be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with Lee Smith, and we're talking about Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger, new and selected stories. If you joined us late, we've talked about the story of Mrs. Darcy, and we talked about several other stories. Lee, as we took a break, I was sharing with you the fun that I had stepping into the shoes of some of your characters, some of whom, you know, I mean, I couldn't, I mean, there's no way that you could, anybody could hope to put me in the shoes of the main character in your story called Big Girl.
Oh, yeah.
And before it was over, I was right there with Big Girl, and the Big Girl is obese. She's known in the community for taking care of old people.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's like every little town has got somebody who will come and stay with your mother when she can't take care of herself anymore, and then she'll die, and then that person will go and stay with another. And she's that caretaker that fulfills that role in the community. And that's my girl here. That's my big girl. And this is all about love, too. And it's all about her finding herself within this role. I loved doing that story.
Well, let me say a little bit about the story, and then you correct me, and then I want to find out where it came from. But this is, as you describe, a big girl who looks like she's going nowhere, but then all of a sudden she's into a quote, dream marriage with her dreamboat. She can't believe it.
From high school, right. The quarterback from high school.
Yeah,
she's taking care of his mother. And he just kind of up and marries her. His wife leaves him, and he just kind of up and marries her. And but he's kind of up to no good in several different ways. And then he gets hurt. He works for the Appalachian Power Company, and he falls off a telephone pole or falls off a building, I guess, and then he's out of work. And so she has to support him, and all kind of things start happening. And she becomes an embezzler because he's kind of expensive.
Right.
And she loves him so much, and she thinks none of this is his fault, but he needs things. There's things he needs, like a certain kind of truck and a certain kind of cowboy boots and different things. And so she has to support him. So she becomes an embezzler. And then what's really interesting is what happens when she gets caught. So I had so much fun writing this story. I found out all about embezzling from the lawyer, Cy Hogue, in Hillsboro. We had a little seminar on embezzlement.
Well, a lot of things attracted my attention in the story. One was this woman who takes care of people. If there are any group of people who need taking care of more than older people, it is lawyers who are focused on, and if somebody can come in and run a law office, take care of the
She becomes a person who is running a law office, and that's how she
very important. And so she needed some money to take care of her husband, and she embezzled a little bit of it. You set it up so nicely because she wouldn't have been caught except for unrelated mistake that brought the accountants in to look at
right.
it.
That's right.
But
like so many characters, I think, in this book, she did it all in the name of love. And, you know, some of the things these characters do in the name of love are, quote, not right. Others are admirable. But, you know, when you're in the grip of certain things, you're just going to maybe do uncharacteristic things. But I think for her, what happens when she gets caught is going to free her up some, which,
well, you know. Maybe that's the reason you got me in the shoes of this big fat girl. I don't know how you did it, but you did, because I could.
She's me. I mean, she's caught in her body, but that's just a metaphor, really, for the way she's been caught by the circumstances of her life, which have been hard. She was an abandoned child. You know, she and her sister, you know, had to set a cabin on fire in the woods so somebody would come and bring food and take, you know, they would get into foster care. I mean, she set the cabin on fire. So it's like, you know, it's just a metaphor for something that a set of circumstances that she will get out of,
actually.
Well,
she gets into jail, and they can't figure out what to do with her, so they set her up with counselor is not the right word.
Well, yeah, it's a social worker.
A social worker
at the jail, yeah.
And it seems like I'd heard that name before.
I'm always doing that, too. I just stick names of people that I love into the book.
Well,
the social worker's name is Lois Rubin, but my fiction writing teacher way back when all the stories started a million years ago at Hollins University was Lewis Rubin. And Lewis said to me one time, he said, well, I don't know why you don't put me in one of your stories. So I just named my social worker Lois Rubin.
Well,
that's something that doesn't mean anything, you know, to anybody but me, but I have a great time
with
it.
Well, no, I think it means something. I mean, a lot of your fans know what role Lewis Rubin played in your life.
Well, in many writers and in beginning Algonquin books and
right.
so on.
So,
it's a little nod, yeah.
It's a nod at Lewis, and so those of us who know Lewis wondered how he responded to this nod, or has he read it yet?
Oh, yeah, he has. Well, interestingly enough, you know, this spring when I'm publishing this book, Lewis, at age 86, is also publishing a new book, and it's his, 56th?
Amazing.
Or something. And
about Charleston.
So, about Charleston, where he grew up. And so, you know, this has been a wonderful tradition to fall into.
We continue to tip our hats to either Lois or Lewis Rubin, whatever. But, I mean, maybe you can't even remember, but when Lewis first read this, you know, he's kind of grumpy sometimes. Did he just say, or did he say
I believe he liked it. I'm mighty partial to my big girl, too. That's one of the brand new stories in here. And, you know, it's a story that is complex in many ways, as is, I guess, my favorite, which is Stevie and Mama. House Tour. And these are stories I don't think I would have ever been able to write as a younger woman. And they mean a lot to me.
But these are two of my favorite stories. And just for be sure we get them in, House Tour is a multi-layered story. But the headline of it is that this woman is in her house and surrounded by houses that are on one of these tours.
Right.
Her house is not on tour, but the Red Hat women decide that they want to that they think it's on tour, and
they all come in.
Every protestation, they come in and start commenting on how messy her house is.
Right,
she hadn't dressed up for the
tour. That's right.
Anyway,
of course, our houses are complete pictures of our lives.
Right.
They're metaphors for our lives. And of course, this happened to me. That's where I got the idea.
Were they really the Red Hats, or just a group of women who came in?
No, it was just a group of women.
Came into your house in Hillsborough and thought it was on tour. You didn't say, don't come in, probably.
Well, they were already in. But they were darling. And, you know, so, yeah, we looked all around and, you know, and had a big time. But the idea of your own self kind of being exposed like that is real interesting.
I know.
It's interesting.
That story's worth the price. And the same thing with this other story you mentioned, Stevie and Mama. about another fully loving marriage, but something happens in terms of a discovery of a past indiscretion that threatens the marriage and in many cases would have destroyed it. And in this case,
doesn't.
They're working around it. In a,
doesn't.
So that it's kind of a message is don't let the perfect be the enemy of the very good.
And it's just the kinds of accommodations we all make in the name of love. And, you know, when you're real young and real idealistic, maybe you couldn't understand that when you thought of a marriage. But, you know, after, you know, when now we've all been in these, you know, 25-year, 30-year, 40-year marriages, and, you know, it looks different from from this end. So
many things you and I need to talk about.
I'm a realist, I think, despite these crazy characters.
The great thing about books of short stories for beach reading is that you can read one or two of them and have your life changed as you sit in the shoe or stand in the shoes of the characters Lee Smith has created. And then I'm afraid you won't be able to stop. You'll have to read all the rest of them, too.
Well, you are kind, Deji. Thank you.
Great book, Lee Smith, Mrs. Darcy and the Blue-Eyed Stranger. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. This has been Who's Talking, and I'll be back soon.